It is September 14th. I mean, October 14th, 2018. It's about 5:30 p.m. and I'm hiking in Joshua Tree. There's been a road closure. The access road off of Highway 10 has been closed due to some pretty big rains we had Friday night. And then another one a week earlier, but I think Friday night was what did it. And yeah, the road's been trashed in a couple sections where it's no longer safe to travel on it by car. Water's a serious thing. You know, it's a very, when it gets flowing in a particular direction, it destroys, you know, everything in its path. And so it ate away underneath some of these built-up sections of the road, causing like a cavern kind of dugout effect, you know, several feet in and then maybe 5 feet high, where you just had a 4-inch slab of, you know, piece of asphalt that no longer had any support to it, just a 5-foot drop from the asphalt underneath it going. And so anyways, so I had this road to myself today, which was pretty cool. And what do I want to do here? Well, you know, as I've grown older, more exposed to just negative stuff, whether, you know, it's been cohabitating with my mother for 5 years, which has not been something I wanted to do, but just kind of a financial necessity, really. You know, that's kind of worn on me, but mostly it's been the cellular exposures, both at work and at my home. And now I'm living in a RF enclosure, and it interferes with my thinking, it interferes with my being, and it interferes with my the expansion of my subtle field and my psychic capacity, you know, my capacity to tap into some kind of a earth energy, earth magnetism. I'm not sure what it is, but there is a connection that people are able to achieve between each other on the subtle level, and this thing blocks a lot of it. And so all this stuff, you know, I'm 53 years old, blah, blah, blah. And so I haven't really written reviews of movies. In fact, generally, I've been finding myself, I'd say, out of 15 movies that I watch, none of them will I get more than 15, 20 minutes into it, except one. You know, I'll go 15 minutes, 20 or less, and just turn it off, because I just see where it's going, and I just don't benefit. I just don't really value the time. I don't like sitting and watching in a vegetative state. But the vast majority of the time, unlike, let's say, 15 years ago, where I had a heated desire to analyze my environment and to critique my cultural exposures. Now, I could not keep up with it, but I had a much clearer vision of what bothered me and a much stronger need. And actually, I was stronger physically and intellectually, at least I believe so. And I had much more benign EMF exposures, which created a far more supportive context on a whole variety of levels. So it is that I just have not gotten around to responding to a lot of these cultural inputs that are ubiquitous and often quite harmful. I'll just turn it off, but I don't take the time to assess it, or analyze it, critique it. But I'm going to try to do a 10-minute little review right now of a Netflix movie. And I just will say that the majority of what Netflix has put out in the last few years has been highly problematic. I would say satanic in its essence. Truly a representing an enormous effort upon what I believe to be dark Luciferian forces to change the moral character of the United States of America and actually all peoples throughout the world. Netflix is a force of evil. I will say that. Netflix is or has become a force of evil for the most part. Whereas HBO has done a lot more positive things than Netflix. But, okay, so here it is. I'm going to do a review of this. So last night I watched a nearly 2-hour movie called Hold to the Night, I think. It had Hold, had Night, I don't know. On to the Night, Hold to the Night. And it's it takes place in Alaska in a remote, very cold, mostly indigenous village of, you know, maybe 50 people, something like that. It was small. And let me get in 1 second here. So I've got a bunch of things to say about it. Let me start with a handful of positives. What pulled me into the movie was the slow, kind of brooding, pensive, kind of introspective pace that recognized the extraordinary beauty and danger of the wild, okay? Especially a cold, you know, dangerously cold wild that had wolves. And in that sense, it reminded me of some movies that I have been very moved by, such as The Gray or The Hunter, and a few others where, you know, I don't think there was a soundtrack to speak of. Yeah, there was no soundtrack. Just howling of the wind and long takes on people dealing with life or death issues and lots of natural, you know, panning into to nature, into the wolves. And so, yeah, the lack of theatrics, the slow pace of it in terms of just character studies and nature studies. And again, no soundtrack and lots of, you know, I don't know. It was just very, it drew me into it, you know, the severity of the of it. The mother of the boy who was killed, you know, she was interesting. You know, she was a pretty blonde woman that lived in, you know, that was one of the few non, I guess you call it Inuit or whatever, you know, these Native Americans or Eskimos. I don't know who they are, but they're native peoples in Northern Alaska. And in this story revolves around how this boy was killed, and the idea in the beginning was that this boy was taken by wolves, and so this lady writes to a man who has written, I guess, a book. He was an authority on wolf behavior and had even hunted wolves before, problem wolves or something like that. But mainly, he was actually mostly a conservationist, and he was he knew a lot about wolf behavior. And this woman reached out to him to come and deal with the problem, of these wolves. One second, the national park guy's coming. I mean, I don't think he wants me up here, but too bad. Too bad. The wolf guy, I didn't find him that compelling of a character. He's, I think, a black man who, he never really even looked at people in the eye. His eyes were kind of dull. He didn't look at the camera much. Most shots of him, I just noticed, were almost entirely of him casting his eyes downward, about dealing with something. He did save a cop in the movie and did a few other things that are somewhat heroic, but he didn't really have a heroic or even a very interesting personality, in my opinion. Another thing that interested me in the beginning of the movie was the husband of the wife of the father of the child who had been killed. And how the child was killed is a whole other matter. But the initial scenes in the movie are of him in, I guess, Iraq, finding one of his comrades, raping an Iraqi woman, and basically stabs him almost entirely to death, and then hands the bloody knife to the woman who's being raped, and giving her the chance to slit his throat, and she does, off camera. But the way he attacked the man was just vicious, just probably, five full-on, full plunges of the 6-inch knife into his ribs from the side. You see, I think blood spurting, whatever. He definitely puts this guy down, and he's in a very weakened state for the woman then to finish off. And then just moments later, as he's walking out, he's shot by sniper fire through the neck and almost dies, and you see blood spurting up. And it's sort of a homage, in a way, to Liam Neeson's The Grey, which was extraordinary. And you're dealing with, in that movie, the death, very intimately, the death of the wolf in his hands, because he's there protecting oil pipelines. And you see the wolf die right before him. I don't know if he's holding him or just touching him that he had just shot moments earlier. And so the idea is that you just have this sort of brush with death. And I guess you get into the needlessness of death in the movie, the wantonness of death. I think there's a native, an Eskimo woman, an elder, who shares a story, I think, about some kids in the community that were stolen by wolves and torn apart in the mountain, in the hills, just body parts strewn apart. And that may have happened. Wolves, mountain lions have been known to do the same thing, which is, overkill. I think most predators engage in that behavior sometimes. There's, whether it's a fox getting into a chicken coop or what have you, but just killing way more than you need and, for way more, not even survival, it's just for the enjoyment of killing, or at least that's what we would like to, the motive, or the lack of motive that we'd like to ascribe to it to justify some of our own insane behavior. Because nature doesn't normally act that way. But apparently, you know, there is this backdrop of like wolves killing kids. Well, it turns out that the woman's crazy and so is her husband. And there's some illness in there, you know, some dark, well, the old woman calls it an evil, you know. She tells the black hunter, the black wolf expert, to just leave the way he came and to leave them to their evil. And so there's this notion that people, some people, are just evil, or they're under the sway of evil, and there's nothing you can do about it. And if you're a Christian, or if you're a spiritual person, you know that that's not true. And if it is true, then you need to put them down, actually. Someone who is utterly corrupt cannot be trusted to participate in society. And so if you really can make a determination that a group of people are evil and beyond redemption, well, then you know what? You need to go all the way and just have them out of the picture, in my opinion. So this evil little community that, you know, with the mythology of wolves killing kids, you know, and then you have this woman, this wife, maybe it's depression, who knows what the fuck it is, but she kills this kid, her son, and buries him in her basement, and it's cold, so he's like in cellarage, he's in storage, he's not decomposing, it's frozen down there, and, but yet she reports him missing to the police, and claims that a wolf has taken him. And there's various things that come up in the movie as far as this linkage to wolves. That I don't buy, because there's a scene early on where, you know, the wolf expert finds this pack of wolves who are eating their own. And some animals do that. Rats do it. You know, if there's an overabundance of children and not enough food, well, the children go. Lions do that to cubs of, especially of prides or something that they've, you know, inherited, and they don't want that offspring from another lion. They'll kill them. Bears do it. You know, alpha predators do this. So it's not unknown. You know, we'd like to think of ourselves as civilized by, you know, keeping everyone alive. You know, but I'm not so sure, you know. I think we need to be more circumspect with how we, you know, a little more cautious with how we use technology to extend life. You know, it represents a fear of living, really, and a fear of death, and it's wasteful financially, and it also, people need to just be ready to die. I'm sorry. There is something to be said about it. You know, we shouldn't just throw 200 grand at the problem to extend your life 2 years, you know, especially if you're, you know, an older person. If you have the money, it's your choice, but, you know, in the socialized system, I would say no. But yeah, the wolf guy comes up upon the wolves, and the wolves rush over to him. He's got his rifle trained on the alpha male, and there's extended eye contact. And what you see is basically an intelligent creature, not hell-bent on destroying humans. And I didn't get the sense that these were the wolves that killed the boy. And guy comes back to the house. You know, the woman's, you know, later that night takes a bath and tries to seduce him, and it's kind of weird. You know, she's messed up. But you get into this, getting back. So the guy, the father, the military guy who's nearly killed in Iraq after killing one of his own men. And it seemed then that he was definitely a scary dude, but a strong sense of right and wrong. And so I was almost ready to say, hey, you know what? That's kind of over the top. You know, I'd rather have his team member court-martialed or something, or whatever the word is, you know, report the abuse to the bosses, to your chain of command. But to kill him straight up? I don't know. And also, the movie, because I did describe the movie as satanic. I'll get to that. It was fostering a very negative vibe. It was just not healthy. We're over in Iraq killing people, and your first scene basically is of an Iraqi, U.S. serviceman raping an Iraqi woman. And while that might happen, I doubt that it happened a lot. It's not a positive light to put our servicemen in. I have heard about quite a few prostitutes, probably, some of them, under 18, brought into the green zone in Baghdad, whatever that was, our military base, our consulate, wherever the hell it was. And so we were trafficking in sex there, but that's the case wherever we go. Wherever a military is, they're going to be screwing the locals. That's just is par for the course. But I would like to say that it's normally a financial transaction. As demeaning as that is, at least it's voluntary, or at least somewhat voluntary. Your financial situation pushes you in a certain direction. It's hard to not take the fast money. But you get into, I'm going to speed it up, so I'm getting tired here. So the military guy, the husband, comes back, and for whatever reason, he hears about his wife being the one who killed the son, and then he kills two cops, he kills a coroner, he kills the medicine man guy, or some, guy that knew his own father, who made these wolf masks that are part of, Native Eskimo culture and, shamanism or certain rites, whatever. He kills that guy for no reason. He takes a hit by he gets shot at by the woman running this motel with one room available in it. One room only, one room for her, one room for the wayfarers. Because she knows that she heard a gunshot and knew that the other dude was killed. And there's this bizarre partnership with one of the alpha males of the little Eskimo community, the Native American community, whatever they were, these people. These indigenous peoples up in that little town, they do a blood oath together. They cut their arms and they put their arms together and they bury the boy. They take the boy out of the coroner's place after killing the coroner and the cops. And it was needless. It was fucking needless. He could have taken custody of that child and buried him however he wanted. There was no need to kill like that. And he, after getting shot at by the manager of the motel, the inn, the bed and breakfast in this remote area, because he's trying to track down his wife and he was on to her, he goes to one of his best friend's house and just collapses there. And the guy digs out the bullets. And but the guy also, though, is reporting to the authorities that his friend is there. You know, this Vernon guy, his name's Vernon, the father of the killed child. And when Vernon hears about this, or hears this, he comes up on him, and the friend confesses that, yeah, I informed the authorities that you're here, they're looking for you, but says that, you know what, he was going to tell him, go, get going. But that he gave a rationale, that he's going to be doing prison time because of his drug problems, and this was going to help him, you know, in terms of lighten his load, or, you know, earn him some goodwill from law enforcement. And but he was not going to let Vernon get captured right away. He was going to tell him and send him on his way before the cops showed up. But Vernon, for no good reason, takes, you know, he's wearing the wolf mask, and takes his knife and stabs the knife through the top of the guy's head as the guy stands up. So a 6-inch knife goes straight into it through his skull. Yep. And that was a crazy scene. Unnecessary death of a guy who'd done a good turn to him, and he had a good reason to report Vernon. Vernon had gone to seed, because what had happened, it's a whole nother thing, is the guy that Vernon was with, one of these Native American, I mean, one of the indigenous people, the alpha guy for the town, when they were at the coroner's office, he was there. He drove Vernon. He was a party to and an accomplice to the murder of the two cops and the murder of the coroner. And they buried the body together. That guy is approached by law enforcement the next day, and law enforcement knew that there would be problems, so they bring like 25 cops, most of them young, green, you know, with them. And Vernon had this indigenous guy had no good reason, you know. All they wanted was info on, where Vernon was, the killer of the cops. And he wouldn't tell him. And there's two things I want to say about it. He goes up, you know, after basically telling the cop off, he goes upstairs, throws open these kind of barn doors, or these, you know, wooden doors, these wooden windows up above, and opens up this 50 cal machine gun with seemingly an endless supply of bullets. He probably unloads a good 1,000 or more rounds in the course of the next few minutes, kills almost every cop there, and just total bloodshed. And he kills them all, and then he finally gets killed by the last cop standing, who comes in through the back, through the booby-trapped door, after disengaging the booby trap, you know, the fish line onto the whatever it was, the explosive or the gun set there. And then the one last cop takes the wolf guy, the wolf expert, and they go flying to this area that the wolf guy had found, which was a cave and a heated, like a geothermal vent with some hot mineral, like a hot mineral spring, basically, in the middle of the winter. But there it was, near the river, that was frozen over. And it wasn't clear how the wolf guy knew that would be the rendezvous point, or the place where Vernon would look for his wife, because apparently that's where they first made love, or they, you know, sealed their marriage, or whatever the hell happened there. So I don't really get how, you know, the Wolfman knew that that's where it would happen. But they go there, and as they're approaching it, in the wolf mask, up in the trees, Vernon shoots the cop who's with the wolf guy for no good reason. No fucking good reason. Shoots him with a crossbow or something like that. I don't know what it was. Pretty amazing, you know. I mean, from 100 yards or whatever it was, just pinpoint precision through the neck. Guy dies almost immediately. And you know, and he also shoots the wolfman who enters the cave to find the crazed child-killing wife in there. And as she's telling her that her husband's coming for him, he gets shot through the back all the way through with, I guess, an arrow of some sort. And I guess he spends the night, you know, with that arrow through him. Doesn't die, but he's dying. And while they, you know, the crazed couple, the husband, Vernon, almost chokes his wife to death, and then he makes love with her, and then they pack out together the next morning in a gesture of goodwill, or whatever it was. Vernon unscrews the arrowhead from the guy, from the, you know, that had pierced his, you know, went through his chest, out his back, and unscrews it, pulls the shaft out, you know, that was quite painful to the man, to the wolf man, and he's able to make it out of there, and some snowmobile people find him and take him to their remote village, some other village, and patch him up a bit before he ends up in a hospital, where the movie ends, basically. But the couple, you don't see what happens to the couple. The couple just hike out of there. Meanwhile, the entire Alaskan authority, all the Alaskan authorities are looking for these people. And what was troubling is the conversation the indigenous person had with the cop. The cop had been good to these people, brought electricity, brought this, brought that, you know, plumbing, had been helpful with some situations that arose in that community, you know, had basically let them do what they wanted to do. And this guy was full of venom, full of animosity towards him. And it was like an irreconcilable state of hatred. Oh, yeah, and Vernon, or I think it was Vernon also, slit the throat of the Native American, of the indigenous woman, the older woman, who knew that, or had a hunch that the wife had killed the son, and that the town was evil. Her throat was slit by Vernon. Unnecessary. And she speaks truth to him about the demons that he needs to face. He doesn't, you know, should not be, you know, basically projecting them onto her and other people. He's got to look at himself. And she was absolutely right. And he didn't want to hear it, and slit her throat. And so, here's what you get. You get a crazy white male going on a killing rampage of wanton, awful, unnecessary murder of police officers, people who had done him no harm, of a wise woman in the community, of his best friend, of basically like a tour guide slash kind of indigenous, I don't know, you know, indigenous tour guide guy up in that very, very remote area. He just shot him for no good reason. And that guy had known Vernon's father and remembered everything from that first meeting where Vernon's father thought that his son was evil or had a problem. But it's, the movie was brooding and kind of focused on evil and had an agenda of people not being able to value friendship, value elders, value commitments to each other, value life, value peace. And again, this indigenous man killed 25 cops for no good fucking reason. They did nothing to him. They did nothing to him. All they wanted to know is where in the hell was the guy who killed the two cops the night before in the corner. Where in the fuck was he? And then the white, you know, the Caucasian male military dude goes crazy and goes on a killing spree too. So what's that all about? You know, are we to believe that the military is staffed full of psychos that, you know, want to kill their wives and murder cops? Is that what, you know, is that what white men do? It was fucking depressing. It was stupid. It was a meditation in stupidity. It was fucking pathetic. And I'm sorry I watched the whole fucking thing. It was almost 2 hours long. The gore was over the top. It was like a Sam Peckinpah or a, I don't know, who are these other, Quentin Tarantino movie or something. It was well done. I mean, the photography was excellent, you know. I mean, it was just, the acting was pretty darn good. It was almost, you know, Netflix is coming out with top shelf material that has all the production quality of Hollywood. But this movie, yeah, it ended. You had the daughter of the wolf guy who's a teacher in Anchorage comes up and sees him in a hospital, or maybe he's down in Anchorage in a hospital. So there's some kind of a reunion for them as he's on an IV in the hospital. But you don't meet her. There's no fleshing out of what that is. And then just devastation in the community. And is it trying to paint rural life as, you know, inherently unstable? You know, the lack of light, whatever goes on in these northern latitudes, do people go crazy? I would say not. You know, it's harder. It's definitely a harder life. But I don't think there are any less, those people are any less respectful of life than, you know, the people in mega cities. You know, they probably are more respectful of life than the people in the cities. As far as, no wolves get killed in the movie, so that was good. And the wolves were not to blame for any recent murder. I would have liked to have seen someone in the community there stand up to the freak who shot all the cops. There was no need for that. And there should have been, you know, more of a sense of balance. You know, that the movie tried to paint these people as entirely corrupt. You know, and really, someone should have stood up to or known or warned the cops of what might happen. You know, you two cops are killed, and of course you're going to get a response. And the cop was very, very respectful, I thought, in talking to this particular indigenous man. But the venomous kind of hatred and the, like, just no matter what the cop said, the cop was always in the wrong. It was like shame. It was like blame. It was like social justice warrior, you know, squared. There's no reasoning with the fucker, you know? He's going to stew in his anger and his sense of violation and whatever the hell he was stewing in. And he, in his little mind, his pathetic mind, he would be justified in killing whoever and however many people he wanted to or could. And so, as I looked at the broader political situation in the U.S., even driving here today, just lots and lots of posters, you know, your action, their future, you know, showing some children, you know, that is, you need to get involved and make the world a better place. But it's, the child was brown, and the idea was that, you know what, modern America, you know, modern America or the Trump administration is not here to help you. They're here to keep you down if you're, you know, brown or yellow skin or red skin. And I don't think that's true. And you try to go to Mexico and you know, have the kind of freedom you've got here. It's just not going to happen. This is still, I would say, the freest country on the planet. And it's got a lot of problems, and there's a lot of work, and, you know, we have lost a lot of ground. But so I saw that thing. What I mean is that there's the resist movement. I've been watching how this billionaire George Soros has given $50 million to ACLU over the last few years to fund their resist project, where now, you know, they don't really care about due process. They're about social justice. They're about fighting power. They're about whatever. I mean, I don't know. They're about really creating division now. And so many groups are that are funded by these billionaire or multi-billion dollar, you know, so-called philanthropic non-profit organizations. The seeds of division are there, and they're trying to water them and fertilize them and just foment anger and dissent and disharmony. They want civil war. Many people want civil war, and so Netflix is contributing to that. You know, white people are evil. They kill cops, and they, you know, I don't know. And indigenous people have a right to just want to wipe out all white people, basically. All authority. All authority is ill. No authority is righteous. One second here. Yeah, I saw another poster. Women, equal pay for equal work. And that has been, that's a, I've watched Jordan Peterson and Stefan Molyneux just rip that canard to shreds that women are paid less than men for equal work. The fact of the matter is that men are more competitive. Men are willing to put more time into work. Men, you know, they might be chosen for higher levels of authority because they're kind of hardwired to be the breadwinner, and they just push themselves harder. It's not necessarily just women. I mean, like, for example, they point to Sweden, or people point to Sweden, where, you know, people can do whatever they want or whatever it is. And, you know, women tend to want to be nurses and teachers rather than engineers. And that's not because they're being excluded from engineering. And so you have to really get down into the details and just read up on criticism of that, that there are reasons why men get paid more. And it's because women are not as competitive. They would rather be, you know, as a whole, they would rather be a nurturing, motherly role, you know, partly at home or, you know, doing more nurturing types of careers. And it's just this notion that feminism has pushed that women don't need men, that women are happy without, you know, without having children and wait until they're 35 to have children. And you know, that's a lie, actually. You know, a lot of women would like to have children in their early 20s or something like that. And they shouldn't be shamed for wanting that. And women, on the whole, don't pursue careers in math and engineering and science to the extent that men do. And there's a bunch of stuff on, you know, even within like an identical career, you know, why it is that men are paid more. And it's justified. But anyways, the poster, you know, along the billboard along the highway, you know, those two billboards, just, you know, one was, you know, brown future, fight the system. The other one is men, you know, women fight, men are the problem, fight for equal pay. And both of those are counterproductive. I mean, there's so many other things we could talk about, because if you know about the history of communism, you know, and really Saul Alinsky, who's a Luciferian, dedicated Rules for Radicals to Lucifer, and was a mentor of Hillary Clinton's. You want to destroy the system that you have in order to bring about a new world order, a new way of social organizing. You have to create chaos. And so really the strategy has been to overburden the social safety net so that the nation goes bankrupt and then pit everyone against one another. Meanwhile, the hidden hand of these elite banking families, the hidden hand of the elite intelligence services, that's not seen. So the activities of the Rothschilds and the CIA that are orchestrating this stuff, you know, and Soros is basically a Rothschild or Mossad agent in that regard. But we are not to follow the money. We are not to question the debt-based money system. We are not to question the need to have, enemies to go to war with at all times. You know, if it's not China, it's Russia. If it's not Russia, it's Iran. If it's not Iran, it's Syria or Iraq at this time. It's always something. And peace doesn't make money. Peace, you know, for the bad people, for the bad actors, peace is not profitable. You don't want, you know, but this has been a timeless strategy. The story is about how, you know, the kings and queens of several hundred years ago, you know, different countries would be cousins and intermarry, and, you know, the royals of each country had more in common with each other than, and more of a sense of duty to each other than to their own people. And so when there's too much peace and prosperity, then the people want more freedom. They want to pay less taxes. They want to be able to speak their minds more freely, etc., etc. And it creates problems for the controlling upper crust, the upper class, the elite. And then, you know, so the kings, these who are cousins or related in some way, would decide, hey, you know what? Let's have a war. Let's have a war let's send all these uppity nobles to fight for the good cause of the kingdom and have them die. And so that's really, war has been used to control people, to bleed out their spirit. And it's a sacrament to Lucifer as well. Lucifer goes back to, you know, these the blood sacrifice required in these ancient pre-Christian Babylonian religions. You know, Moloch worshiping, or whoever, the Baal, whoever the hell they were worshiping, the gods required the blood of the firstborn, the blood of the people, you know, blood. And so that is these ancient Babylonian mystery schools, or whatever the heck they are, dark entity worshiping cults, persist today under the guise of the Order of Death. A subset of the Order of Death is Skull and Bones, which is a Yale University elite club that is part of the Order of Death, the Death Set, 322, all that stuff. You know, they believe in blood sacrifice. And the Order of the Death Set, Order of, was, you know, a group that was a part of that were the SS, you know, Hitler's Stasi, or whatever the hell they were. I don't even know what SS stands for, but his stormtroopers. Or the SS was actually more of his elite, kind of a counterintelligence group or something like that. I don't know. I'm not a historian. But, so anyways, all the war serves a variety of purposes, none of them good. And I think that's all I'm going to say right now. You know, and so that movie was full of, it was basically a sacrament to Lucifer, with all the death that occurred there, the mindlessness of it. And what kind of future does that man and woman have, you know? Cursed. These cursed people. I don't know. That was a cop-out to just call it a curse. Not worth your time. Over and out.